everyone. Welcome to Soulmates Podcast. This is Emily.
And this is Rachel.
Today we are talking about, let's be honest, a really, really, really good show.
So good.
From Netflix, shockingly.
Yes.
We are talking about Blue Eye Samurai. And if you are into adult animation or anime or, I don't know, violence, you've probably heard of this show.
Androgyny.
Yes. Oh my god. Blue-Eyed Samurai, it's an adult animated action show by Netflix. It was written by a husband and wife team, Michael Green and Amber Noizumi. Jane Wu was the supervising director and series producer, and it was co-produced and animated by a French studio called Blue Spirit. It was released on November 3rd, 2023, and it is 8 episodes. But the cool thing is, if you don't have Netflix, you can watch episode 1 on YouTube, and you will be able to see why it's so hype.
Yeah, that's awesome. Yeah, you'll definitely be hooked after episode 1. So sorry.
I know. Just watch it, and then get like a free trial, and then just binge all of it.
So smart, Emily. Yes.
And this show was renewed for season 2, thank God.
Oh God, thank God.
It's gotten a very good reception. In fact, it has a 100% on Rotten Tomatoes.
Wow.
I know Rotten Tomatoes is not the end-all be-all, but it just goes to show you that, like, critics loved it and the audience was really positive towards this show.
And us, the most critical, most acclaimed reviewers, we liked it, so...
We are the most critical, let's be real.
If not the most acclaimed, the most critical.
The most cunty.
The most yassified.
So they got a really, really strong voice cast. Maya Erskine, she's from Pen 15. She plays Mizu, the main character. There's Masai Oka, you know him as Hiro from Heroes. Darren Barnett, he is the hot guy from Never Have I Ever. Ooh. Brenda Song, you might know her from The Suite Life of Zack and Cody or Dollface. She's also married to Macaulay Culkin. George Takei, I mean, the social media legend, and of course, Hikaru Sulu from Star Trek. Randall Park from Fresh Off the Boat. And if you haven't seen that, he's Asian Jim from The Office. Kenneth Branagh, he is Lockhart from Harry Potter and the Chamber of Secrets. He's also a known director and actor. And of course, the Queen, Ming-Na Wen, the voice of Mulan. And she was also in Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.
I just want to say, you forgot Brenda's song, Most Shining Accomplishment, which is Wendy Wu Homecoming Warrior, Disney Channel original
My
movie.
Bad. My bad.
I'm just kidding.
You gotta put the respect on Wendy Wu. And this is just the main cast. They got a bunch of other people too. It is a very large voice cast, but I thought it was cool how many, like, really awesome actors they were able to get for voice roles.
Yeah, I mean, that's a pretty stacked cast right there.
I thought George Takei did amazing. Like, he has such a distinctive voice. And, you know, he is a Japanese older man. Give this man more anime roles. Like,
yeah.
He should be doing voice acting.
Yeah. Well, maybe they can't afford him. He is pretty famous. Yeah.
Okay, Rachel, why don't you read the very short, shockingly, summary of Blue Eye Samurai from our friends at Wikipedia.
Yeah, it's one sentence. And also, please forgive me, my Japanese pronunciations are not the best. During Japan's Edo period, which is 17th century, half-white, half-Japanese, Onamusha, Mizu, quests for vengeance against four white men, one of whom is her father, who illegally remained in Japan during the closing of its borders by the Tokugawa shogunate.
I feel like that's not snappy enough, because it's that, yes, but there's also a lot more than that.
Yeah, like, it's true, but, like, her quest for vengeance is so elaborate.
It's John Wick.
John Wick could never, I'm sorry. Like, I've watched a lot of those movies. It's fine. It's a lot of fighting. Mizu's character is so nuanced and, like,
mm-hmm.
It's just an incredible show. It's so much more than just a quest for vengeance. And it makes it seem like she's after, like, four white men. Season 1, one white man. Just one.
Yeah, single white man.
Yeah.
This show is an expression of female rage.
Yes. It's chef's fucking kiss. Like, I have never identified more with a character's anger before. Mm-hmm. Like, they honestly did. They got female rage so correct. It's so, like, calculated, and it takes so much for us to get there. Mm-hmm. The show does, like, a great job of crafting that story and that feeling. Ugh, it's so good.
Mizu, the main character, is so complex. On the surface, you might be like, she's out for revenge and that's her whole thing, but it's not. As the show progresses, it's definitely not. And you don't get caught up in, is she a good person? Is she a bad person? I loved how each female character was so obviously filled to the brim with anger. Mm-hmm. And they all expressed it differently. I feel like people are always saying, like on book talk or whatever, like, I just want a book or a movie that just a woman goes off, like where she gets her revenge, where she snaps and shit like that. And this is the show, mm-hmm. everyone. This mm-hmm. is it. She snaps.
Mm-hmm. There are so many moments where you're like, fuck yeah, Mizu. Take it back. Take back the power that's been ripped from you.
Mm-hmm. We are going to talk about the first 4 episodes. There are 8. We're not going to talk about the last 4, and it will be hard. Mm-hmm. But we're going to focus on the first 4. So there will be spoilers, but only for the first 4 episodes.
So we start off in episode 1 in a soba shop. Mizu encounters a quote-unquote flesh trader, which is someone who basically brings women to brothels and is like, how much will you take for her? And they're like, 2 gold coins. And he's like, sick, and then leaves. So basically a shitty person. So mm-hmm. she encounters this person who happens to have a Western pistol. Now, remember what we were talking about earlier in the synopsis. Japan's borders are allegedly closed. So him having a Western pistol, that's weird.
Very suspicious.
So Mizu forces him to reveal the name of the weapons dealer that he got the Western pistol from, Heiji Shindo.
Bum, bum, bum.
Yeah, Heiji Shindo is someone we see throughout the series, so he comes up again.
He is a shit.
Yeah, shit dough, if you will. She basically kills this guy because he tries to use the pistol on her, and she's like, tell me his name, and then just like, kills him because he's an asshole. Ringo, the kitchen attendant, is the son of the person who owns the soba shop, and he was born without hands. So he just has arms and wrists, but no hands. And he follows Mizu. He's adorable. Love him so much.
He has wristbands that he tucks tools into.
Yes.
To act as a prosthetic.
Yes. It's so cool, like, that they included, like, not the fact that he just, like, doesn't have hands, but he, like, has created accommodations for his disability, and he just, like, lives life as normal. Like, he cooks soba, he puts the kitchen utensils, like, in his wristbands and continues as normal, but he really wants to be a swordsman. So he follows Mizu and, you know, is basically, like, starts calling her master, even though she's like, please God, no. He basically forces himself on her as an apprentice. And then we switch to another main character in the story, Princess Akemi, who is the only daughter of the daimyo of Kyoto, Lord Daiichi Tokunobu, and she is desperately trying to convince her father to approve of her marriage to Taigen, who is a young and accomplished samurai. Taigen and Princess Akemi we see over and over again, as same with the daimyo of Kyoto. Mizu seeks a meeting with the master of the Shinto dojo to find out the location of his brother. When the request is denied, her request is denied, it leads to conflict. Mizu basically, like, defeats every single fucking person in this dojo.
Think Kill Bill.
Literally.
Kill Bill was a major influence for this show, and I can definitely tell.
Yeah.
But imagine one woman army.
Literally. And then Taigen comes back into the picture, who tormented Mizu as a child, we come to find out, is now the dojo's prized champion. But when Mizu defeats him, the master reveals the location of his brother. Mizu also, when she defeats Taigen, chops off his fucking hair and he looks crazy.
He has a bald spot.
Yeah, he looks so stupid for most of the show because she basically humiliated him. So now that she knows the location of Heiji Shindo, she basically goes on a quest to find this man. We find out in a flashback as a child that Mizu learned how to fight from Master Eiji, a blind swordsman. And they reveal that they find like a glowing blue metallic meteorite that the Master Swordsman really wants to make a sword out of. She becomes his apprentice and learns swordsmithing and swordcraft from him. So that's why she's so good at what she does. And then we end the episode back in the present, who, at the behest of a foreigner, very important foreigner, Heiji Shindo dispatches assassins, the Four Fangs, to kill Mizu. Yeah, he figures out that she's coming for him.
He figures out that a mysterious samurai who nobody knows is looking for Heiji Shindo.
Right. So fearing, well, Heiji Shindo is not worried, but the foreigner is like, you should just kill this person. So they send the Four Fangs to kill Mizu. And then Ringo also discovers that Mizu is a woman, hilariously calling her boobs peaches.
You go this whole episode without it explicitly being said that Mizu is a woman. She, in the flashbacks, has a buzz cut. She dresses as a man. She never says that she is a woman until the very end, where she takes off her clothes and walks into the, like, the cold ocean and you see her boobs. I thought it was a good reveal, even though my trained gay eye, I'm like, that's a woman. Mm-hmm. That is an androgynous woman.
Not your trained gay eye. Your queer eye, if you will.
Yeah. So I thought that was a good reveal. And it makes sense that she would dress and pretend to be a man, because it is said multiple times in this show, men in Japan are afforded the luxury of revenge, and women are not.
Also, women do not practice or learn swordplay.
She is an outsider because she's biracial. Mm-hmm. She's an outsider because she is a woman in a man's world. She's an outsider because she's an amazing swords person. She's an outsider because she is able to, like, do blacksmith stuff. Like, there's all this stuff that makes her separate from the collective of that time. Each of it is a brick that builds upon each other.
Yeah, she's literally not like other girls.
Built different.
She's built different.
Okay, episode 2. She very reluctantly allows Ringo to join her, and they arrive at a coastal town looking to hire a boat to reach Shindo's island. His brother is like, God, get out of my fucking dojo. This is where my brother lives. He lives in a castle on an island. Very hard to get to. So while they're trying to get a boat, we cut to Shindo and the mysterious foreigner. They are plotting a surprise for the shogun in Edo, which is Tokyo. Taigen pursues Mizu. He's like following after her and Ringo because he's like, I want a duel. I want a real duel.
Akemi does not even care. Taigen is, like, so embarrassed, he, like, has to fight Mizu and win again to feel better about himself.
Right. Well, because Akemi convinced her father to allow her to marry Taigen because he was the best samurai at the dojo. But after he was defeated, her father is like, you know what? No, this guy ain't hot shit. And so she was like, it wasn't a real duel. You guys didn't discuss terms. You didn't lose. And he's like, you're right. I should go fight that guy again. And she's like, no, that's not what I mean.
He's like, yes, I should bring paperwork.
I know, right? So he becomes a pest and just follows Mizu and Ringo being like, I want my duel. Like, excuse me. I want my duel.
We've been like, trying to reach you about your car's extent. Literally that.
I know. So because of Taigen's defeat, Akemi's dad is like, you're going to marry the shogun's widowed second son, and you're going to Edo in 5 days. And she is not for this. She says that she's in love with Taigen. She doesn't want to go. And her dad's like, huh, I don't give a fuck about what you want.
Yeah, she's like, I don't want black teeth, which honestly, girl, I understand.
Yeah, I get that. She decides to run away and search for Taigen instead. Although her dad's retainer, who basically is the person who raised her after her mother died, Seki, voiced by George Takei, he catches her and he can't stop her, so he joins her and they hit the road. So we go back to Ringo and Mizu. the town they're in, they're like, it's a matsuri, it's a party festival, like, everyone is drunk, no one's taking you on a boat, sis.
Yeah.
So Mizu's like, fine, I guess I'll get in some training. She's training on the cliffs. Ringo is eating noodles, having the time of his life.
Yes.
While she's training, she kind of has a flashback, and she remembers an assassin named Blood-Soaked Chikai, who tricked her and her sword father into forging him a sword, which broke at the tip and it had like this jagged edge. It broke because Mizu was inexperienced with the process of sword making. The four fangs attack her while she's like training slash meditating, and their leader is this asshole who tricked them. And he's still using that broken blade, so it must have been good, huh?
Yeah.
Mizu battles the fangs on the cliff and she like kills one after the other. It was an intense battle. I loved the cinematography for how they shot it, how they animated it. I don't know what the correct term is, but it looked amazing. She is heavily injured in the process, and shocker, she becomes more and more injured like every episode. I'm like, how does this woman not drop dead? She's too angry to die.
Literally.
She fights the four fangs, is really, really badly injured. Taigen comes up and he sees that Mizu has just defeated these four people and he's like, let's duel. And she's like, sure. And then immediately falls on her face because of the blood loss.
Yeah.
So Taigen has the opportunity to kill Mizu. She is passed out, but he decides to help her instead and to wait and hold off on their promised duel. And it was very gay.
It was incredibly gay.
It was so gay.
So in episode 3, we pick up where we left off, and Taigen and Ringo take Mizu to shelter at a nearby shrine. She then agrees when she like comes to a contract to duel Taigen when she's recovered. So she signs his paperwork, which I think is hilarious. A huge man then appears at the club and delivers an invitation to a, quote, tea ceremony with Heiji Shindo. Mm. Though Taigen is like, this is obviously a trap. Mizu's like, whatever. And they accept and they both travel to the meeting. Heiji actually ends up, you know, doing the tea ceremony with them and gives Mizu 3 options. Be paid off to renounce her vendetta, be smuggled into Heiji's castle in sake barrels to kill the white man, or refuse and be killed by archers supposedly hiding nearby. Mizu calls Heiji's bluff and cuts off his arm.
It was shocking.
Yeah, she was like, actually, I'll take none of your options and cut off your arm instead. Taigen and Mizu escape with Ringo's help while being bombarded by hundreds of arrows because it was not a bluff. There were a lot of archers hiding nearby. And that was kind of a harrowing scene. But afterwards, Mizu knocks Taigen unconscious and leaves him with Chiaki's broken blade and a note promising to attend their duel at a later time. She's like, listen, I'll do your duel. I have this revenge thing I need to do first. Taigen is then subsequently kidnapped, wah-wah, and taken to Heiji's castle. So now we cut back to Seki and Akemi, who are ambushed by brigands, surprise, surprise, and lose their money and transport. They then hire a cart using the last of Akemi's jewelry, but Akemi discovers that they are traveling in the wrong direction. Seki reveals he has enough money to hire a horse back to the palace and implores Akemi to give up the search for Taigen and accept the marriage which he brought before her father. Akemi angrily rejects the offer and tricks a flesh trader into transporting her instead. So she decides, I don't want to marry this prince. I would rather be a prostitute and look for Taigen that way.
She doesn't put a lot of thought into it either. She's like, I'll pretend to be a prostitute. It won't be that bad.
Yeah.
And the way that she convinces this guy, she's like, look at how small my feet are. Men love her feet.
Yeah. I mean, she's like, obviously, nobility. So like her skin is very soft. Mm-hmm. Her hands are very soft. She hasn't done a day of work in her life. She's a pretty face. Lots of pluses.
And very tiny feet.
And very tiny, delicate feet.
Okay, episode 4. So Mizu seeks out Madame Kaiji's brothel, voiced by the incredible Ming-Na Wen. Love that bitch.
Yeah.
So she seeks out her brothel to follow up on what Heiji Shindo revealed about how prostitutes can enter the castle of Abijah Fowler, the white man she's seeking. We finally get, like, dun, who it dun, is. Dun. Kaiji promises to give her information if Mizu agrees to do one thing for her. And that one thing is a hit. She needs her to kill a woman named Kinyo, who is a deaf, mute girl who used to be in Kaiji's care before she was forcibly taken by the local mob boss Hamada. She wants her to do a mercy killing. She tells Mizu that she can't kill Hamada because there would be a power vacuum and the person to fill his seat would be even worse. So Mizu breaks into the mob boss's house, does like a ninja act. So she's like sticking in shadows. She's crawling on the floor. She finds the girl alone and she does a sign that Madame Kaiji told her to do. Madame Kaiji's like, she'll see that you're there from me and she'll be at peace and then you can kill her. And so Mizu does the sign and the girl's like, no. And Mizu does the sign again. And the girl's like, you're scaring me. No, get away from me. And then you hear like this noise outside and the deaf girl's like, oh shit, they're gonna come in here and abuse me. But Mizu is able to convince her that, no, I'm here to protect you. So Mizu's holding her tight and then twists her neck and kills her. It was like really heart-wrenching.
Yeah, that was a really hard scene to watch.
She kills a bodyguard and tries to make Kinyo's death look like an accident. But on her way out, a little boy sees her and she's like, I'm not covered in blood. Two people were fighting and I heard them. Go get the cops. But the little boy instead goes to the mob boss. They all show up at Madame Kaiji's brothel with all of his fighters, and it's like another army ready to tear Mizu apart.
Yeah.
And he's like, okay, kill everyone in this brothel and light it on fire. After realizing Akemi has run off, Lord Daichi sends his men after her. Akemi is actually at Madame Kaiji's brothel at the same time as Mizu. And she sees that Mizu has Taigen's scarf. And she's like, this must be the mysterious samurai. Akemi persuades Madame Kaiji to let her try to seduce Mizu. Before that, though, she had to prove her competence. So Madame Kaiji is like, you must pleasure this veteran customer. And from there, I will determine if you can work for me or not. This is your prostitute probationary period. Everyone's like, ah, it's this big, ugly guy who has ED, and it's going to be so hard. So Akemi goes in. She uses his interest in poetry and her proficiency in it to catch his interest, to bring him under her spell. She does not let him touch her, but she does show him her feet, and he's feet. Able to jerk off and come.
He's like, feet.
Yeah, and so she's like... She's literally like the nail emoji. She's like, okay, I'm done. So she's being applauded. And then she's like, okay, now I'm going to go get that samurai that just came in. And I'm going to do it because no one says no to me. And she goes in there attempting to drug Mizu with sake. And Mizu's like, I don't like sake. Mm-hmm. And she's like, well, maybe just a little taste. And Mizu's like, no. So they're there together. And then that's when Hamada comes and... All of the prostitutes, Ringo and Akemi, they go down into like the secret basement and Mizu is left to defeat another army all over again.
Meanwhile, in Heiji Shindo's castle, Taigen is being beaten mercilessly for information about Mizu.
And that's where episode 4 ends. Very gripping.
And it only gets more complex and more exciting in the episodes afterwards. So...
We're talking political intrigue. We're talking...
Gay shit. We're talking...
extremely gay shit. We're talking marriage. We're talking love lost. We're talking having feelings about your mother that are very complicated.
Mm-hmm. This show is so good.
I mean, it's so good.
If us reading you the first 4 episodes of plot have not convinced you, I don't know what will. It's amazing. Seeing it in action, it's so beautifully animated too. Like, it's a feast for the eyes, as well as everything else.
It definitely is. So I watched on YouTube the, like, behind the scenes of the animation of Blue Eyes Samurai. And apparently they made all of, like, the background stuff. before they made like the models of the characters and did all the animation.
Oh, wow.
Because they wanted to have the freedom of like the quote unquote camera moving around. And so as they were like writing the show, they're like, okay, we need like a tree there. And then they would do that. And I thought that was really interesting. If you haven't seen that, you should definitely check it out. I thought it was really good. I'm so happy that this show is going to have a second season.
Me too. That's so exciting.
I am like balls to the wall. Let's go.
Yes.
This show got me so excited. Kyle and I watched this with a friend and we were pacing ourselves, only watching two episodes every week. And every fucking time it was time to watch it, I'm like, let's go.
There are no dull moments in this show.
Even like the quiet moments are not dull at all. Right. And I will say episode 5, oh my God. That is like one of the best episodes of a TV show I've ever seen.
Yeah. The way this show mixes like flashbacks with just relentless pushing forward of the plot. It's just masterful storytelling. It's really good.
You gotta watch it. Let's do our ratings. On a scale from 1 to 5, how would you rate the acting of Blue Eye Samurai?
5. Easy.
I'm also going to rate it a 5. The voice acting was really, really good. Okay. On a scale from 1 to 5, how would you rate the plot, the writing of Blue Eye Samurai?
5. Super original, but also has historical context, but is also from like the viewpoint of a very unique, nuanced character. Like, it's just amazing.
It's definitely a 5. It is truly unique. In a time where everything's a goddamn reboot or a IP of something else, this is a breath of fresh air.
Yes.
Okay, on a scale from 1 to 5, how would you rate everything else? Like music, character design, cinematography, animation, anything else?
My God, another 5. It's so beautiful. The characters are unique. It doesn't look like different faces were put on the same body type for women and men. I just loved it.
I loved how different every character's body was from another character. Everyone had like a different face shape. There was diversity in eye shape. It was so good. Everyone was a Japanese person in the 17th century, but they actually looked like people and not just like copy and paste models. Yes. Also, the music is definitely inspired by Kill Bill. I mean, at one point there's like a Metallica cover while Mizu is fucking people up. Sometimes the music, I'm like, this is a little bit of a weird choice. But by the end of the scene, I'm like, no, they were totally right for using that.
Yeah.
This, I think, is the very first show we've ever reviewed where we've given it like a perfect score.
Yeah. And as you know, we're the most critical bitches on the internet, so...
We are so critical and mean. Run, do not walk, to your Netflix and watch this show. All right, let's wrap up this episode with our weekly K-pop recommendations. I am going to recommend Wife by G-Idol.
I'm going to recommend Love Me Like This by NMIX.
All right. Thank you so much for listening to this episode. You can find Soulmates Podcast on Facebook, facebook.com/soulmatespodcast.
You can find us on Instagram at Soulmates Podcast. That's where our link tree is, which will link to all of our relevant social media accounts.
Send us an email at soulmatespodcast@gmail.com.
Check us out on YouTube under our channel name Soulmates Podcast. We have some videos you can watch there.
This program is available pretty much anywhere podcasts can be found. iTunes, Podbean, Stitcher, and Spotify. Wherever you're listening right now, make sure you subscribe because we are there every other Friday for you. We'll see you in 2 weeks. Bye!
Bye.